12-Sided Stories is for mature audiences and often deals with topics that may be difficult for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
In the city of dreams, everyone wants to be a star, but at what cost? 12-Sided Stories presents Otherworld Hollywood.
And welcome to Otherworld Hollywood, episode number 31. I am Wes Otis. I am here with some amazing players. Let us start with Candace.
Hello, everyone. My name is Candace, also known as Candace the Magnificent. My pronouns are they, she, and I am playing Ebony Evie Belafonte, she, her.
Hey, y'all. I am Mac Beauvais, and I am very proudly back playing Lenore Von Mori, a.k.a. Cass Richardson, a.k.a. simply, ironically now, the Vamp.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sam Starr. I use she, they, and the occasional fae pronouns. And today I have the pleasure of playing, seemingly for the last time, my sweet, sweet baby girl, Amani Duvaux, who uses she, her.
Hey, I'm Michelle Otis, and I am playing Belle Bellington, also known as Bitchmatic or Belly Button, or what was the other one?
Belly Button.
Smellington.
Smellington.
Hi, I'm Lev. I use they, them pronouns. I'm talking in a weird way, as usual. What else is new? And I'm playing Roberta Robbie Serios for also probably the last time for now. Robbie uses they, she pronouns. And I'll stop words now.
Enjoying the show? Then take a moment to join our Patreon. Support the podcast and get early access to episodes and bonus content. Head to 12-Sided Stories Patreon today.
This seems like a good place for a recap. In the last episode, you had made your way down into this huge cavern to confront the priest of Cthulhu. Meanwhile, all of the deaths from around the world decided to confront Anubis, who had basically tried to keep Lenore to himself for movie nights in the Field of Reeds. And so they had to intervene, and she was reunited with all of you with Penelope. There was an ensuing fight. None of you are very fighty, but you were able to overcome the priest and kill it. It was outside of this door that was breathing, slightly opening every time a breath went out. And unfortunately, Penelope did not make it. She got struck really hard and died. And there was a bittersweet moment of death trying to comfort Lenore, but saying that there's nothing he can do at this point. Robbie being Robbie and Evie being slightly unhinged decided to take a look beyond the door to see what was behind it. They saw this massive body, 100 stories high, like a mountain, sleeping, tentacles everywhere, big body, and all of these fish eyes looking at, you know, all around the cavern lit up. And they both missed their resolve check and let out a audible sigh that in this large stone cavern echoed enough that the creatures attending to Cthulhu decided, hey, we should go check this out. They chased you, ran you up the stairs. Robbie almost fell off the stairs. Cass scooped her up, so now Cass was running up the stairs with both Penelope's dead body on one shoulder and Robbie on the other. So all of you were running up. The creatures that were chasing you seemed to start leaving. Like, they ran a good distance behind you, but you're not sure why. Maybe they were getting too far away from their master, but they let you escape. And you make it up to the cave that you crawled through to get it to the staircase in the first place. So we are going to pick it up after you've crawled through that particular place. You are back in Penelope's house, and you're all kind of standing in the living room. Where would you lay Penelope?
Probably lay her in her bed or on a couch or something.
Okay, so what do you do with Robbie?
Lenore definitely sets Robbie down gently, lays out Penelope, but has not turned back to her human self, and actually leaves the room. And a little bit later, you just hear howling outside, just like the saddest sounding shit you've ever heard.
Okay. You all are standing in the living room, and I believe it's Tuesday morning or something, and you're hearing this howling going on. And you realize that you're going to have to deal with Penelope's body, and you don't think Cass is going to be up for it. And right then, Buttercup comes bounding into the room and wants to be picked up by Evie.
Evie just immediately bends down and snatches Buttercup up and just like buries her face right into fur and starts to cry and just holds him.
Buttercup reacts by licking the side of your face. Belle, what are you doing?
I want a shower and I need to sit down after that. And I know we've been kind of staying at Penelope's on and off, so I probably have clothes there, and I'll go to a different bathroom. Not that one. Not the one. And I'm going to have a shower and process.
Okay. So you take your shower and kind of go off by yourself in this gigantic house. Robbie, Easter is right next to you, meowing at you and pawing at you.
I'm going to scoop him up. And as I kind of bonk foreheads with him, I'm going outside to be in the light, in the sunshine, not in a cave under the water. And also to wait for Cass outside.
Okay. Cass is in the backyard. You're going out front or back?
Whichever way I saw Cass go out, I'll just wait outside that door in the grass with the cat.
You head back and you see Cass kind of in the middle of the backyard, just howling this mournful howl. And Easter says to you, well, I failed her twice. I had a second chance and I failed her twice. Maybe Alizé and Eugenio were wrong. Maybe there was no way to save her from this kind of end. I mean, when you live in this kind of life and you're dealing with supernatural creatures, death is ever present.
She was very brave and she helped us and was kind.
True.
The world would probably have ended without her. I think I'm saying it not quietly. I think I'm saying it loud enough, like thinking it's Easter and also kind of saying it loud enough that I know Cass can hear it too.
Okay. He goes, do you mind if I stay with you?
As long as you want to. Yes.
I would like that.
And then I think Robbie's just going to lay back on the grass and feel the sunshine and put the cat on their chest and just be close to Cass so Cass doesn't have to be alone.
Okay. Amani, what are you going to do?
I think Amani probably is just going to sit somewhere. I think kind of like how Robbie goes outside to just decompress. I think Amani just finds a non-occupied room and lays in the middle of the bed like starfish, just looking up at the ceiling.
Just laying there, you realize how sore you are, how absolutely tired you are. And without much, you slip into a deep sleep. And for the first time in a long time, you don't dream. You just sleep. Evie, seems like everybody's kind of taking a moment to process and deal. And it does feel like the first time that there's been this breath of air. What do you want
to
do?
Ebony goes over to a spot in front of the hearth and probably like leans back against the sofa that I imagine is in front of it, sitting on the floor, Buttercup in between her legs as she's kind of sitting with her legs kind of crossed. And she closes her eyes and tries to pray to Hathor.
So you give out this little prayer and you don't feel her presence there. And then suddenly you start feeling a lot of warmth in the room. And you open your eyes up and Buttercup's asleep on the couch next to you. And you see this fire start to come up into the hearth. And the fire says to you, come closer.
Evie definitely scoots forward. I don't know if you're Hathor or if this is some kind of trick, but I can tell you, I've been through too much to be afraid of you now.
I am not Hathor. I am Metatron, and I took Hathor off the planet. But I heard your prayer, and I've talked with Hathor, and I have a question for you. I don't think it's right what God has done, but unfortunately, he is God, and so I cannot contradict him. But I can offer you something. Hathor and Ra have agreed to stay in the Dreamlands. I've agreed to let them out of prison. Hopefully, God will never find out, but God can't touch them in the Dreamlands. As long as they stay there, they'll be safe. I offer you the same. You can stay here on the planet, or you can go with them into the Dreamlands. But it's an either-or situation. If I allow you to come back and forth, God will figure it out. Call on me when you've made a decision.
Thank you.
You are welcome. And the fire fades away.
I think Ebony hunkers back down, draws her knees up to her chest, and sits in contemplative silence.
Cass, you can hear Robbie speaking loudly to Easter, and you realize it's because they want to be there for you, but want to give you space. It's very much a Robbie thing to do.
I take a deep breath and start transforming back to a human form with whatever scraps, if any, clothing has survived any of these things that have happened.
Yeah, you're like 90% naked. You're 50s naked. You're 50s naked. You've got 50s something.
Naked, yes.
Yeah. Nipples are covered. That's about it.
And I'm going to go over and sit next to Robbie.
Easter kind of stretches over towards you and gives you a lick on the cheek and nuzzles you a little bit as well.
I just kind of give him a nice, you know, sort of pet and, you know, offer. I lean my head towards him in offering of, like, if he wants to talk, but not forcing it.
Unfortunately, you can tell he's trying, but he just kind of shakes his head, and you understand, just being more closely associated to the animal kingdom, that cats are from Mars and werewolves are from Venus kind of thing. You can't really talk across each other.
So I kind of nod.
He's giving you his condolences, basically. Robbie, do you say anything?
I think for the first time, Robbie lets the silence linger and kind of gives Cass the space to talk if she wants to and to nod if she doesn't.
Okay. I would like to fast forward to the film premiere, if that's okay with everyone. So you all take time and you all think about what's happened. You sleep for the first time. Robbie, you're probably the only one who sleeps and finds Bassett. Bassett talks with you a lot, has conversations. You guys have some very intense moments together of both romance and lust kind of mixed in together. A lot of it's emotionally charged. Bassett tells you that she cannot go back to a physical manifestation, at least for a while. And it's basically the same reason given to Evie. The only difference is that she's always only visited you during nighttime. So there was a clear difference between her and Hathor. So she comforts you. After a couple of days, Robbie, you get a call from Danny, and he goes,
I have seen the film now after Jacques has finished the edit, and it's not going to fly.
Who's not going to take it?
Distributors aren't going to take it. We have to shelve it. We're going to do an opening night for it just because we spent all this money, but they're not ready to take on a film with that amount of controversy, was their words.
Is it controversy if it's true?
To them it is. I told you they weren't going to do it. I tried to warn you. Getting people to change their minds is difficult, and they weren't ready.
I'm sorry, I'm not really in the mood for I told you so's right now.
Well, I'm not in the mood to shelve a movie that costs so much money for the studios, or in the mood to deal with the death of my closest friend, and it's been a lot for me too. I've lost people. Penelope included. It's not an I told you so. It's a think about it next time. If you want to be an activist, you got to be more subtle.
I think we've all seen that subtlety is not my forte.
Yeah, that's true. See you at the premiere.
Robbie just kind of sits in silence for a while and then I think calls their parents.
All right. You have a nice conversation with your parents.
I don't bring any of it up.
Yeah, I didn't figure you would. They just talk about it. They tell you that they got a call from your uncle and they're going to come down and see the movie. so that you guys can see it as a family, and they're excited. Mac, your couple of days before the premiere are full with probably talking a lot with Henri. I don't know how much you tell him about anything in particular. How much would you tell Henri?
I would be not forthcoming about all the supernatural stuff, obviously, but he would know that, you know, whatever story we gave about Penelope, probably some kind of accident, you know, he would know about that. There would definitely be a conversation because he knew that, you know, there was someone.
Right. He's very supportive. He sticks with you a lot. He's kind of omnipresent because he doesn't want you to be alone. At night when you sleep, you look for Penelope. And unfortunately, you learn that the pack is separate, that when you die, you join this celestial pack, a hunt, an eternal hunt, and you become a full wolf. One's an afterlife and one's not. You think about the small statue tree that's keeping Sir Nunos from coming to the mortal realm. But after Penelope dies, he doesn't really mention it to you. It's still in your back pocket at home, though, when you're on the mortal plane.
I think I probably look at it a lot.
Belle, what's Belle doing leading up to the premiere?
I think Belle, because she's not aware it's going to be shelved yet, she's been doing write-ups about the film, about the cast, about Jacques Couture, and about Robbie as a writer, like little individual write-ups to kind of plug the film. Nothing scandalous, you know, but just little write-ups, because not everything is scandal with gossip columns, right? But she's doing all these little things to plug the film.
So you're writing, and every once in a while, your eye glances over to the envelope full of pictures that could possibly ruin Imani. Do you hang on to that envelope, or do you get rid of it?
I put it in the safe.
Okay. Sounds on brand. So you're doing your thing, you're writing everything up, and you get a phone call.
Hello?
Hey, it's Cass.
Hi. What's going on?
Well, you and I obviously have not seen eye to eye for a good long time now. And I don't know where you're at with things. And I don't know. I'm just going to be blunt. Are you going to try and destroy me and Henri from this point? Or can I assume that we've bonded enough that maybe that's not part of your agenda anymore?
I think you've been through enough. And if I'm being honest, with everything we've been through, I forgot I even had the stuff. So consider it destroyed. It's not coming back.
I appreciate that. And I hope that we can have better blood between us.
Me too.
Thank you.
And Belle does stay true to her word, and I destroy the pictures.
Okay. Evie, what do you do in the intervening days to the premiere?
Evie goes out, buys herself some nice clothes, starts thinking about whether or not to buy a new place or not, and kind of asks each person to spend time with her. She very much just sort of leans on the fact that she had a very, very public breakdown in front of all of these people during their descent into the abyss to coax everyone into having like little one-on-one times. It's mundane. It's not anything crazy. Like with Belle, I think she's like, Belle, help me, please help me go find some new outfits. I know that you don't always have the best eye, but you could at least tell me if I'm on the right track. With Cass, I think there's like a movie night. With Robbie, I feel like there's like a day at like the library and the bookstore. And with Imani, I think there's just like a walk around town, maybe to Grumman's and other places that are like newbie LA places, knowing that she literally just got here and has not had 5 minutes to do the LA stuff in LA.
Yeah. The Brown Derby and that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Just soaks up time with the people that she loves and thinks about the offer.
So at some point during this kind of tour of people that you've been interacting with, Richard, your agent, comes by and kind of finds you, says, hey, haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks. How you doing?
Oh, Richard. Richard, it's been a dinosaur's age, really. Did you hear about the sinkhole? My house is no longer standing. It was quite the event, really. I've been hard to reach.
Did you get out from underneath New Day?
I don't relish speaking to you about my mistake, Richard, darling. But yes.
I'm not here to rub it in your face.
I did get out from underneath them, thank you. I don't think they'll be bothering anyone anymore.
Good, because I got a offer from Paramount for a leading lady, and they think you'd be perfect for it. Start shooting in 2 weeks.
Excuse me? A what?
A leading lady in a movie role. You know, the thing you do for money?
A lot has happened. You never understand. I couldn't explain it to you. It's just too wild. It's just too wild what I've been up to. Paramount, you say?
Yes.
Hmm. And what is this role? Is it befitting my regal countenance, etc., etc.?
It is. It's about a doctor who is working in Europe during World War II. You have a love relationship with, I think they were talking Rock Hudson, something like that. Was the name being thrown around?
Excuse me, you're saying that I would be the lead and I'd be playing a doctor, is what you're saying?
Right.
Yes, well, how soon do they need an answer?
Then the next week or so, it starts filming in about a month.
And would I be able to recommend other people for different roles within?
Yeah, I think I can make that happen for you, kid. Look, I've always been there for you. I've always watched out for you. I know that you didn't like my advice when all of the Cut'em Films things came up, but the way that you've handled Cut'em Films and the way that you've been lately has put your stock price back up and people want to work with you again. And I am glad. Even if you don't use me as your agent in the future, I just want to see you get what you want.
It's lovely to finally hear you have the right attitude when speaking to me. Surely I have more than 24 to 48 hours to reply yes.
Yes. Like I said, they're going to start shooting in a month, month and a half. So get past your premiere with Cut'em and then let me know what you think.
All right. Ta-ta.
All right.
She keeps that to herself. She sits right on it.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
But any other time that she meets with anyone else, she asks like really obtuse, veiled questions to try to figure out whether or not they'd be interested in coming along on this journey. Because if nobody wants to go with her, it's going to change her answer, I think.
Okay. Amane, what are you doing to the lead up of your big acting premiere?
I think Amane has been doing some soul searching during this time. I think probably by the end of it, she's like changed her hair. It's not just like all out anymore. I think she's probably locked it. So it's all in like these starter dreadlocks. I think she's leaning back into what she knows and what she's comforted in. So a lot of home is being reflected and coming out of her at this point. She's not all done up like a pinup anymore. She's kind of homey looking to a sense. Loose flowing skirts and blouses. Like she resembles a lot of her grandmother back home in New Orleans as a like a voodoo priestess. Like she's very old school Marie Laveau-esque looking now, I think.
At some point during those couple of days, there's a knock on your door. When you open the door, it's Danny. Say, Amane, how you doing?
Hey, Danny, I'm doing. How about yourself?
Sorry to pop in on you. I just wanted to talk to you. I'm doing fine. The film is going to be premiered tomorrow night, of course. But I wanted to talk about something in the interim. Is it okay if I come in?
Sure, by all means.
So you guys sit at the kitchen table, and he goes, I'm going to be frank with you.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I don't think the film is going to do well. A lot of distributors are passing. We might get it in a few places local, maybe a couple places outside of the United States might be a possibility. But the company is in trouble financially, and we need to make some of that money up. I mean, Tony's not going to float the studio forever. And I need a new person to run the BDSM part of things. I know that you are relatively new, but I also have seen your work. And I think that you could do a good job. Vivian always kind of spoke highly of you in the brief time you were there. So I need somebody that I can trust in the position. Does that sound like something you could do?
I think Amane sits long and hard with that. I am, I'm a tad unsure, to be quite honest. Not that I don't think that I would be good to helm something like that. However, I don't really know if acting is for me, if that makes any sense.
It does.
I think I came here and I had these big, beautiful dreams. And as soon as I came in contact with them, everything just fell to pieces. I have to find myself, and I don't know if Hollywood is where I need to be to do that.
I get that. And just so you know, you are far from the only person that has had that happen. A lot of people come out here and they get to the valley and they think to themselves that they're going to make it and they're going to be big stars. And you did well. I mean, you're in a small picture, but it's still a picture. There's a lot of people out there that never get even that chance.
Very true.
I don't know. I get wanting to look for something that makes sense to you. So I tell you what, if you ever decide you want to do some work, you let me know. And he stands up and he puts his hand out.
Amani smiles at that, a genuine smile, and grabs his hand with both of hers and shakes. I'll keep that in mind.
See you at the premiere. And then he walks out. So the premiere comes. Your Uncle Jake is there, Robbie, with your mom and your dad. You guys are in like the third row back, so you don't have to kink your neck back too much and whatever. Danny was able to get a lot of people to show up to see. Tony's there. How do you feel seeing all these people there to see your movie, but also knowing that it's probably not going to play more than a handful of places? What's going through Robbie's mind?
I think this is, aside from their outings with Evie, I think this is the first time Robbie's been around like a significant number of people in a number of days, and they've kind of been dreading it. You know, when you do a thing and like you're proud of it, but you also know that people are going to be paying attention to you because of a thing that you did that you're proud of, and you dread the people being paying attention to you because you did a thing that you're proud of, and you like feel, and then you feel weird for dreading a thing that you're proud of because people are going to be.
No, yeah, absolutely, all the time. I think that's very common.
Yeah, it's just that like awful loop. And like that kind of like feeling like you've made something, and what the fuck does it even matter because no one's going to see it. So it's a lot of like really conflicting emotions going on for Robbie. But I also think they're really happy to see their parents. I think Robbie's going around to all of the friends that they've made and been like, these are my parents. Okay, bye.
That's nice. All right. You all sit back and you watch this film, and Jacques Couture gives an intro. Goes, when I was told that I would be working on this film, I was full of fear that I was not going to be able to bring it to life the way it needed to bring to life. But our crew and our small budget came together, and I feel we have made a masterpiece here. I would like to say that though being able to pull everybody together and being able to tell this story has been really a high point in my career, I obviously couldn't have done all of it without the cast and crew. It has been a wonderful experience. This film has a lot of emotion to it for a horror film. And I think once you see it, you'll realize just how far ahead of its time it is. Without further ado, let us watch. And then the curtains go up and the film plays. And it's not a horror film. There are horror aspects in there, but it is very much what Robbie wrote down. Things are veiled but thinly. And the audience is very quiet throughout. There are a couple of scary moments, a couple of ghosts and that kind of thing. At the end of the film, the curtains go down and everyone starts to clap. And your uncle, Jake, turns to you and goes, that was great, kid. That was a really good job you did there. And everyone congratulates you, comes up, shakes your hand. It's overwhelming.
Robbie's shoulders slowly like creep up toward their ears.
And the same happens with the rest of you, except for Belle, because Belle, you're press. But everybody else, Amani, people are talking to you, people you've never met before from different studios. an agent from Paramount comes up and talks with you, Evie, and says, you know, we reached out to your agent and we hope that you'll work with us. We'd love to have you come on.
Lenora, executives from the network of your new show come up and say, we're very excited to work with you.
And the night kind of goes on like that. It's a big party. Everybody has a good time. Everybody has these conversations.
But at the same time, it does feel like an ending, like a chapter of your life has come to a close. As you all say goodnight and you go your separate ways, there is that feeling in the pit of your stomach that things will never, ever be the same, that you've been changed, and there's no going back to who you were before Cut'em Films. And now we move to epilogues and find out the paths of each of the characters and what the future might hold for them.
The day after the film, Robbie, your uncle shows up at your place. Your parents have left in the morning. They said they'll see you during the holidays, but they had to get back.
And your uncle knocks on the door. You open the door up and he goes, so do you want to go for a trip? Get out of here for a while?
Well, where to?
Well, after I saw the movie last night, I realized it's been a while since I've seen Mom. She's getting up there. And I thought the two of us would go to Puerto Rico and then maybe go over to Europe for a little bit.
This is a crazy question. Are there any caves underwater where we're going?
I'm gonna say that there are probably caves all over the world underwater, but we don't have to get near any of them.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Yeah, that's great. Let's, I just need a couple days, and then I'd like to go, I think.
All right, I'll get tickets for the end of the week, and we'll be gone for a couple of months.
Then he gives you a hug and heads out. What things are you going to do on the lead up to this trip?
I think Robbie goes back to their apartment and just kind of stands in the doorway for a while because it doesn't really feel like theirs anymore. But they pack up all of the things that weren't destroyed by the flood, and they're gonna take their fish over to Imani.
And Easter?
I'm going to see if I can bring Easter.
Okay.
Easter's become like a kind of constant attachment to Robbie's shoulders. Robbie kind of talks them in, or tries to talk them into like wearing a little harness with a leash. Just so it looks like.
No fucking way.
So I can take you with me so no one thinks it's weird that there's just a cat on my shoulder.
No fucking way.
But don't you want to go with me?
Robbie, any other being I would maul, but I will let you put your stupid harness on me so I can go with you.
You're such a good boy. Robbie tries to like hold their glee in as they carefully put this like studded harness on the cat, but notably doesn't hold on to the leash at all. Just kind of like has it tossed over their shoulder like they have it somewhere else, like, and it's completely just loose.
All right, so you head over to Tatu Imani.
Yeah, I just kind of, I show up at your door with just a fish bowl and this like barely alive little like sucker fish. I think that's what I said.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go away for a little bit. Not forever, or in a bad way. That sounded really ominous. I'm just going on a trip with my uncle, and I think Callista will die if I leave her in my apartment.
Okay. And Imani kind of like shuts the door behind her a bit and just warmly smiles at Robbie.
I should have called first. I'm sorry.
It's fine. Don't worry about it. I'll love to take care of her. Thank you for trusting me.
Watching my fish, especially after all those fish people chased us. That was real, right? Well, that was real. That was really real, right? We were there and it was real and...
Mm-hmm. It's still a lot to take in. I understand. But thank you for being a friend, Robbie. I don't really have much of those here, so...
I haven't really had much of them ever, so thanks, I guess, to you too.
And Imani will take the fishbowl and hold it over to her side before wrapping Robbie in a big hug.
You really made everything. You made it all come together.
I was the one that kind of took it apart, but...
Oh, I was talking about the film. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was a lot of really unfortunate series of events that you were really part of, and I'm so sorry. I should have...
Robbie, it's fine, darling. You take care of yourself. Be safe, all right?
You too. Robbie's cheeks, like, flush a little bit being called darling like that. And I think the last kind of thing Robbie does is just make a circuit of everyone and just let them know that they're going to be out of town. Just be, like, I think it's one of those things of we've been in each other's pocket for what feels like forever, that one of us going somewhere and being somewhere else feels almost scary.
Oh, Lev, real quick, I think before you leave Imani's, she'll go back into her apartment and give you a letter that's addressed to Cass. If you're going to see her, can you give this to her for me, please? I don't think she really wants to see me, so... And I'll just...
I think eventually she might.
I wouldn't exactly hold my breath.
I'll hold it for you.
Don't... I wouldn't suggest you do that neither.
No, I wasn't going to do it literally. It was a metaphorical kind of... I'll have the hope and you can have the realism kind of thing.
Okay, all right. Okay, that works.
Okay, so you shut the door... Let's do your scene real quick, Imani, then, since we're there.
Okay.
You shut the door, you go back inside your apartment. What's going on in your apartment right now?
It's all packed up. Everything's in boxes that's going to be thrown away, a couple of suitcases, and now a goldfish bowl that I have to get food for now. but yeah, I think everything's pretty much empty. And Imani is going to call Evie.
Okay. Let's do that real quick then.
Hello.
Hey, Evie.
Oh, Imani, darling. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
All right. A little disappointed about this film. It's funny you're reaching out. I actually wanted to talk to you about something. But please tell me, what is it that you need? What is it that you're doing? How are you?
I'm doing better, Evie. But why don't you say what you want to first?
Well, I was going to say I have, wait a minute, you're doing better. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I think I found a part of me in all this.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the reason why I called you, actually. You hear time and time again never to meet your heroes because they can disappoint you. But meeting you was never a disappointment. You were there for me even when I was not really there for myself. And you didn't judge. And her voice starts, like, cracking and breaking up a little bit. You were family when I thought I had no one. When I thought I lost everyone. And there are no words I know in English or Creole that can express my love and gratitude towards you for that. Thank you for being... my best friend here, and being every bit of hero I thought you were, and then some.
There's a long pause on the other side of the phone, and then you hear kind of a muffled sob.
Oh, Imani, spending time with you was a joy. I know it wasn't perfect. I know everyone had their moments, but I would be remiss if I didn't assure you that the feelings were mutual. I was quite selfish. After moving here, this place changes you in ways that I don't think you expect sometimes. It makes you look at pieces of yourself rather than the whole. A lot of that wonderful, down-home sweetness and kindness had to go when I lost my accent. I turned into a version of myself that was beautiful, but I didn't quite recognize. And I'm sorry that the same thing seems to have happened to you, but glad that you have found your way back out to the light. This sounds like a goodbye, is it?
Yeah, I think it is. I hope one day we can cross paths again in this life or the next.
You must do what is best for you, darling. I will always be rooting for you, no matter what you decide. And please just remember to always stay true and honest to who you are. You don't deserve or need anything else in your life to regret. Enough of that now, yes?
Yeah, enough of it.
Hug your family extra tight when you get there.
And Imani's silent at that for a second before she smiles, and you can hear it through the phone. I will.
I love you, darling. Thank you for helping me remember who I am.
Thank you for getting me to the place where I could find who I was. Take care. And Imani will hang up the phone and wipe her tears before going over to a stack of paperwork that's sitting on top of one of her suitcases. And it is like a leasing agreement for an apartment in New York City, as well as renter's paperwork, a warehouse. On the top of it, it's got like a whole business plan, and it says the Buttercup. And the paperwork where Imani's name is signed, instead of Imani DeVoe, it says Evie Otis. And she just kind of shuffles it all into her folder and sticks it in her suitcase, shuts the lights out, and closes the door.
Awesome. Let's jump over to Candace then. Candace, you hang up the phone. It's been a couple of days. You've heard the news that the movie is going to be small release. You didn't really get a chance to tell Imani what you were going to tell Imani over the phone. She kind of caught you off guard, obviously. What do you want to do?
I think knowing that Robbie is leaving, knowing that Imani is leaving, seeing the success that Cass has ahead of her, this new show, I think Evie does one last movie. She gives exclusive rights to all the behind the scenes and all that to Belle. Doesn't really put up any kind of fight on set. Does whatever is asked of her. Tries to bring in more money that she kind of stashes away. Anyone who is paying attention notices that she drives herself to the studio a lot every day. She still wears nice clothes when she's off camera. Nothing like the excess that she used to have. She knows everyone on set's name. It's a very different experience, I think, than everybody expected to have with her. And I think just as that movie debuts, she does her circuit, all that stuff. But before Richard can ask for the next job, she makes her peace with the world around her and then leaves, calls Metatron. I think she has like one final ride just to say goodbye in her way and experience this life in a way that she's never been able to before. But like missing everybody is just too much. And I think she realizes that she has one more option.
So you do this movie and it comes out to rave reviews and there's Oscar talk because you've done so well. People think you're more authentic in the role than you have been in a while. Like you're not just phoning it in. And you set up all this information, basically where everything's supposed to go, what's supposed to happen. And you kind of clue Robbie into, you know, how to deal with giving out your instructions and all that. And they find your body on the bed day later. And they can't find a reason for you to have passed after the autopsy. But you find yourself next to Hathor in the pool. And she says, I'm so glad you decided to come and live with me. I'm so glad you're here.
I've missed you terribly.
We'll make an eternity of it. And she gives you a big, long kiss. Okay, so, Belle, you go back to your editor. You put in the piece that you have. She's not happy because you were supposed to come back with some major stuff on Cass. You were supposed to have some salacious stuff on this. And this is a couple of days before it breaks that Evie has passed. And you're doing all this stuff, trying to convince your editor, you know, hey, this is good stuff. I've been working with Evie. This last movie she's been on, you know, Robbie's been gone for a couple of months. Every once in a while, you get a postcard in the mail from wherever they are, you know, in Europe or backpacking through the Alps or whatever the hell. There's always this thing about staying away from caves. And at some point, Tony comes and talks with you and says, hey, you're at your house. He says, I hear you're having some problems with your editor. They want more dirt. What are you thinking about doing?
And I say, wait till you read tomorrow's Times. Belle sent in an op-ed, and it's called The Real Tragedy in Hollywood. And it talks about the shelving of the film and that this was a masterpiece that should never have been shelved. And the, you know, just she just goes off on a lot of stuff because she knows that it should have been a wide release, right? And I say to Tony, I go, well, I got a couple options. I can always go back to the crime beat, or I can be a film critic.
Yeah.
I still get to tear people apart.
True.
But I don't need to dig anything up to do it. I just watch their films.
So this last few months has been difficult. And I know we've talked about this before, but I think you should really consider coming home. You've been on your own for a while now. It's not the same. We work well together, is what I'm saying. You can be a film critic. You can do your own thing. You know I'm older and wiser. You should come home.
We would need to have some ground rules set in place.
Okay. What do you got in mind?
No more mistresses.
I can barely keep up with you at this point, so that's not a problem.
I'm too old to have kids.
Yeah, I know that train is gone too. I just want to be able to protect you.
You are right. We do work well together. And, you know, when it comes to the crazy supernatural stuff, maybe I can help protect you too.
Well, let's hope that that's not a problem.
Amen to that.
And he puts his hand just under your chin and gives you a bit of a kiss. It's all right. I got a moving van out front. We'll get you packed away.
Boy, aren't you confident.
You're not in my position without being confident, Toots. And then he walks out the door.
As he's walking out the door, I smack him on the ass.
All right. Cass, what have you been doing the last several days, weeks, months, getting ready for your show? What's going on?
So I'm sure that the studios are probably keeping me very busy with prep and this and that, and depending on the reach of, you know, Belle's article and the articles that she's been writing, I'm sure there's been some additional interest in Cass. But she's finally feeling like she's got some actual real power to what she can do, and would talk to Robbie before the trip, and I think that's kind of where I want to
go to. I would imagine Robbie probably shows up at your front door at some point.
Yeah, and has the letter.
He has the letter, yeah. So let's do that real quick.
Yeah. Hey, come in, sit down. I won't fix you a drink.
Thank you.
But I realized some things, a lot of things. And I know that I once counseled you that there isn't much that we can do in this town. But I'm in a different place now than I was before. And some of my priorities have changed. And as much as I think I will always love the horror monster movies and all of that, you know, ironically, in many cases these days, I want to tell something real. I want to tell my story.
Is it going to be like a thing that you share on the show?
I want you to help me tell my story. I can't think of anybody better.
There's probably plenty of better people. I wrote a story and no one saw it. No one knows it. I'm not subtle. We know this. I want people to know you, though.
I don't want to be subtle anymore, Robbie. I've had to be subtle for my entire career. And I think I have some things to tell. People are probably going to just think it's a movie anyway. They're not going to believe it. Even if we told the whole fucking truth, no, an audience isn't going to believe it. But we can still tell them something they'll feel. Will you help me?
Of course. I'll do anything for you. You people are the only people who were patient with me. Well, besides my parents, but no one, they kind of had to be, you know? Maybe they didn't have to be. Some parents aren't patient, but my parents were patient, and then out in the world, no one else really was. And you were, yes, I talk too much anyway, yes. Anything.
Yeah, I need to tell her story, too.
She won't be anywhere but with you.
Oh, I know. I thought it was a curse at first, but now that's what I got of her.
We'll make it a happy ending this time.
I'd like that.
Yeah. I don't want to go on this trip.
You should, though.
I know, but I feel so afraid to be apart from any of you.
Yeah, well, you're not going off to fight monsters. You have to come back to Hollywood to do that.
I know I have to go because I have never really been anywhere besides here in Texas. And I've never had like a home like this, though. I've never had people that were a home like you.
You're coming back.
And Belle.
You're coming back. That's the nice thing about travel. It's not forever.
It feels very forever. I know it's not, but like, I'm so anxious about it. Okay, well, if anything happens, you have to Well, you can't call me because I don't know where I'll be. I'm gonna send you an itinerary, and I'm gonna send Belle an itinerary, and probably Evie and Imani too, just so we all know, kind of. And then when I'm gone, I'll start writing, and I'll maybe we're going to Europe, so maybe I can find out more about different things and about, you know, stuff that I'd never learn here. And
I'll be here when you get back.
Okay, you promise?
As much as anybody can in this life.
Okay, good. I promise I'll come back. Oh, Robbie's like scrubbing their eyes. I almost forgot. Imani wanted me to give you this. She wasn't sure if you'd want to see her. And I'll just kind of like hold the note out. I don't know why I'm going to cry again, but I feel like I'm going to cry again. Because even though everything was really bad, it was really good too. It feels like that's ending, and endings are scary, I guess. So here.
Credits gotta roll.
Imani, do you want to say what's in the letter?
Yeah, sure. Dear Cass, we've been through a lot, especially you, and I figured you seeing me would be a lot right now. I know I can never make up what it was that I did to you, and this letter isn't me asking for forgiveness. This is me forgiving myself and promising you that I will make the changes that need to be made. I am deeply, deeply sorry. And I don't have any other... And it's all scribbled out, tear blotches. I know an apology seems minute, and I don't expect you to accept it. But I just wanted you to know that that person was not me. I don't know who that was, and I don't recognize it. I am better than that. And even if you don't see it, I'll be proving it to myself every day. I hope you take care of yourself and are easy on yourself. It's hard when you beat yourself up. So take care, Imani.
And Cass is, she's going to read the letter. Probably while Robbie's there, and doesn't say what it said, but she does pack it back into the envelope. She gets up and puts it on her mantle place right next to the figurine she still has from Penelope.
Oh, Michelle, you wanted to say something?
Because Evie would have told Belle ahead of time that she was going to the Dreamlands. And how do I know this? I asked her in chat.
All right, well, that is a good question. Does Evie tell people that the decision that she's made?
Evie tells Belle. I think Evie has a moment at the end of the movie, sees the growth arc that Belle is experiencing. And, like, that's really the catalyst, I think, for her being like, okay, Belle has somebody. She won't be alone. Like, that's the final piece. I think that's why Evie does the movie. Belle getting her ducks in a row and getting to a place where she feels comfortable in the world, I think both heartens and gives peace to Evie, but also makes Evie miss Hathor that much more. So yeah, but I think that Evie definitely would have told Belle and given instruction as well. Like Buttercup now lives with Belle. And I think that Evie would have asked for goodbyes to be given on her behalf.
And what Belle does is I write a full page obit for Evie. And it's just titled, My Friend. And, ooh, I'm getting all choked up. And in the obit, I leave little messages for Cass and Imani and Robbie that only they would know were for them. But I leave messages for them from Evie.
After Evie's passing, there's a funeral. Somehow, and it's never really explained, the estate of Penelope and her books and everything else land in Cass's control. She gets an inheritance. It seems like some shenanigans were caused, but you're not sure how. At some point, death does come and visit you and says, you know, I'm really sorry I wasn't able to save your friend, but you still mean a lot to all of us. And, you know, I apologize. Time moves on. All of you deal with the fact that you all kind of separated and went in your own ways.
Evie ended up winning the Academy Award for Best Actress posthumously and kind of becomes this legend of like rebirth and then tragic death. Over the years, her passing is studied and investigated and becomes a true crime staple. Robbie, you end up writing this film and more films. The reaction to the film about Puerto Rico is mixed, but it becomes a cult classic over time. And as the waning years go by, people start to understand what it's really about and are more accepting of it as time goes on. As the civil rights movement starts up, people glom onto it and the rest of your films, especially with all the things going on in the world. So that's at least some comfort. And your Uncle Jake always tells you, changing one person's mind is an amazing feat. And you've changed more than that. So you're doing well. Evie, you have this wonderful life in the dream worlds, which is this whole different place that's not anything like Earth. You continue to have huge adventures to the present day and beyond. You're basically immortal. So you and Hathor are happy in different planes of reality, but you never forget your friends. Belle, you keep a watchful eye on Tony. You become a movie critic and really have a lot of success with it. Hollywood also changes. Though far from perfect, the Red Scare is over. And those columnists that don't change their stripes slowly lose their jobs and their columns, and you're able to hold on. Amani, you go back. You have been feeling peculiar this entire time, kind of weird, been very reflective. Tell me about your business just quickly. What exactly are you doing?
So I think the Buttercup's grand opening is the day Evie wins her Oscar posthumously, and there is just a lineup of candles outside as like a vigil for Evie itself. But Amani strides in and it's all these rooms and red lights. Amani has opened New York City's first BDSM club and she is the house mother. She was like, hey, I don't like inflicting pain on people that's not consensual. So this is absolutely up my alley and I'm damn good at it. And it's extremely popular underground club. But I think Amani walks through and she's just like checking rooms, making sure that her peoples are all good, her employees. And she just sits in this massive office with this big luxurious chair, and right on her desk to the right is a picture from the premiere of her and Evie. And there's Belle's column, her obit for Evie in the corner framed. There's like all these little newspaper clippings of Robbie and the stories that they've been telling. Don't ask how she got it, but she got the promotional poster of Cass's new show as well. And that's also framed in her office. She just keeps these little bits and pieces of all of them with her.
So you're sitting there and you're looking at all this stuff and the grand opening's about to happen. It's all hush hush to a certain extent. You've made friends. They're going to invite friends, you know, and you'll probably have some of the leather community and stuff showing up and all that.
It absolutely. And during the daytime, it's like a front probably for the Black Panthers free lunch program. So like she gives them that, she gives them the warehouse like during the day with the lights on to feed the impoverished children and families in the city.
All right. So you've put all this work into this club and you're doing a final walkthrough of the warehouse before opening night. You pass by one of the rooms and there is a huge mirror there. And you catch something out of the corner of your eye and you look and There's something wrong with the mirror. You seem a bit faded almost, like you're disappearing or something. And suddenly your mouth really hurts, and then your head gets a huge spike in it, like you have a terrible migraine.
This is not the time. Oh, this is not the time. And Amani is going to, like, try to go to her office to find, like, some pain medicine.
As you're turning around, you look into the room one more time, and Elizabeth is standing in the mirror, and she says to you, Amani, wait. I've been waiting a while to speak with you. We're going to be such good friends. And then suddenly you feel inside your mouth this pop, and you taste blood as your canines elongate into vampire fangs. And that is where we're going to end Otherworld Hollywood. Thank you, everybody.
What the fuck?
Wes, what the
Wesley.
Fuck?
Not even that's Wes, it. But Wesley.
I'm going to get my spray bottle, Wes. You will feel these droplets from the harsh winds of Florida South.
Wes, do not make me use my flight points to book a flight out there just to meet you in the Denny's parking lot. Sir, I don't want to. I'm not going to jump you. I just want to talk. I just want to talk. That's it.
Yeah. You just want to talk. And Evie just wanted to talk. And she went feral with the spear, so.
So I really appreciate this was a great season and episode. It was a lot of fun. And there's no way that I could have ended the show without leaving Sam on a cliff. So.
You could have. You absolutely could have.
You really could have. You genuinely could have. My poor girl has been through so much. It's
well, you know, I wanted to make sure that I tied up all the loose ends. So,
she got burned by Ra. She's loose.
Hey, but at least you're a vampire now.
Oh, fuck me. That's hotter, actually.
Yeah. You're a vampire now. All right. So, this was amazing. I know this was a really long episode for those of you listening, but I think it's a really good episode, so I think it's worth the time. Let's find out where all these wonderful people are. Let's start with Sam.
Hello, everyone. I am Sam Starr. I played Amani DeVoe / Evie Otis, who is now a vampire, I guess. You can catch me all across the internet at Lust for Life X. LustForLifeX. Wes, thank you so much for this story. This was wrapped up so fucking beautifully. What a journey. Watch me on Transplanter. Follow me on social. That's where you can see all my stuff. I'm done. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I have been Candace the Magnificent. Ebony Belafonte signing off for the last time. You can find me at the Candace Marie on Twitter and Blue Sky, at Candace the Magnificent everywhere else. You can see me every other Saturday on Matihi's channel, MATEEHEE, doing what we do in the Shallows, which is a 5e queer horror campaign, as well as on Bloom and Blight and Beyond the Outer, wherever you catch your pod.
Hey, y'all, I have been and will continue to be Mac Beauvais, and that might be the end of Lenore's story for now, but mine goes on. Find me everywhere online as at Strange Like That.
Hey, I'm Lev. You can find me on Twitter at Lego M2, the number 2RS, or on Twitter and Blue Sky, or not Twitter, shit, Instagram and Blue Sky at lev.rs23. If you want to hear me say more words and be other little weirdos, check out Mayday Roleplay. We've got a bunch of different kinds of games. I'm also in some audio fiction horror podcasts if you're looking for spooky shit. Thank you, Wes. This broke my heart like 8 different times. So cool. I appreciate it. And I love all of you so deeply.
Hey, I'm Michelle. And you can find me on the socials at Mishulu. That's M-I-C-H-U-L-H-U. You can find my music and Wes's amazing sound effects if you subscribe to the Plate Mail Games catalog through BattleBarts.
And I am Wes Otis. This has been an amazing show. We have had a ton of fun. Now, usually we do an after show for each of the shows, but I kind of feel like I just want to let this one rest, let people think about what happened and make their own decisions about, you know, all this other stuff. But overall, it has been an amazing ride. I have had a great, you know, cast of characters that have done great things. We have all gotten choked up.
So it has been awesome. If you have made it to the end of this episode, then I'm going to assume that you already know the spiel, where we're at, where you can find us. And, you know, just go to 12sidestories.com and join us there. Thank you all so much, players. You were amazing. And we will see you hopefully in another story at another time on 12-Sided. Bye, everybody. Metatron stands at the throne of God. He knew this day was coming. Of course, God knows everything and sees all. So allowing the Egyptian gods to slip into the dreamlands didn't go unnoticed. And the fact that he helped a human, a mortal, one of God's children, to go live with them for eternity, well, that was the last straw. Metatron looked down at the floor as the sentence was passed. You are cast out, but not to hell. You will go to the earth like Cain. You will do no more damage there. Maybe someday you may speak for me again. And with that, he falls from heaven to earth. Still Metatron, but now wandering, and now far from his God, who he loves. Centuries later, on a different planet, a base has just started to terraform the landscape. Called Mars, it is the god of war, the red giant in the sky. But of course, it's not an actual god. It's just a planet, right? The leader of Mars Station makes his way to his quarters. His day is done, and he's going to watch his favorite movie. It's a film about Puerto Rico, the horrors that happened there in the 50s. He's Puerto Rican himself, and the film gives him a connection, even though he's so far away from home. To him, it is not only a masterpiece, but something to be proud of. As he watches the film, he doesn't notice the red alarm going off. For some reason, he can't hear it. He doesn't see the flashing light. He doesn't realize that something horrible is happening at his base.